As you can see, not from Microsoft. I'm from a company called Steria, which is, I guess, not present in Portugal, so probably you won't know. I'm from Germany, as well as Michael. And as you might have noticed, I'm not the regular SharePoint guy. I'm coming with a Mac. So, but even PowerPoint works on Mac, so we're good to go. So just a brief introduction of myself, Matthias Einig. I'm working as a SharePoint developer for about 5 years or more than 5 years. I've been working for the company Steria Mumbai Consulting in Germany, which is a part of the Steria group. And yeah, usually I do architecture of SharePoint farms. I do consulting in SharePoint development. I implement SharePoint processes in bigger development teams in different companies. Two brief slides about our company and then we'll get started, okay? So Steria is, I guess, pretty big for a consultancy. We have 16 presences in 16 countries. And we have also some offshoring in India. We have some nearshoring in Morocco. And yeah, some revenue, I guess. 18,000 employees. And yeah, about a fourth in India. So we do pretty big consulting stuff all over Europe. So this session is about SharePoint development. We got the introduction already of Michael with the Silverlight and the integration of Silverlight into a SharePoint. into a SharePoint document library and integrated with a Silverlight web part. So in this session, we will focus a little bit more how do I develop directly in SharePoint, how do I deploy my content on my SharePoint site, and also some brief introduction into the application lifecycle, which will be explained a little bit more in detail later on by my colleague. So at the beginning, just a brief introduction. I think most of it was already said by Michael. Then I present the developer toolset for SharePoint 2010, basically Visual Studio, Visio, and SharePoint Designer. And then we learn a little bit about what's new in SharePoint development with Visual Studio 2010. At the end, I will explain a little bit about the options, how you can create your development environment. There are different ways having your development environment set up. And at the very end, I will explain a little bit about a special extension for Visual Studio, which even eases the process in development for SharePoint. So most of the things were already said by Michael. Of course, you've seen the improved UI, the ribbon interface, which is pretty new. Those of you who work already with SharePoint 2007 probably somehow have to adapt to the new ribbon UI. But I think it's a pretty big leap forward into the user interface. Also, as said before, we have the client object model, which was not present in SharePoint 2007 or 2003. Also, the workflows, support in SharePoint 2010 is much improved. In 2007, it was only possible to create workflows either with very limited possibilities in SharePoint Design in 2007 or with Visual Studio 2008. But now we can also have site-level workflows with SharePoint Designer. We can export them. We can model the workflows in Visio. And we can also import everything into a Visual Studio project and deploy them on a bigger farm, for example. One big thing are the business connectivity services. In 2007, we had the business data catalog, which was only a one-way road, so we could only retrieve information from external databases. And in 2010, we can do it both ways. We can synchronize data. We can access data from anywhere within SharePoint, use it in other lists, and so on. I will show us in a session, in the first demo session, I will show a little bit more about that, how easy it is to access external data which is not stored in SharePoint directly. Yeah, and of course, we have also some improvements in the administration sector. So in 2007, we had SCS-ADM, which is a command line tool which allows you to do certain configuration tasks in SharePoint. Now we have full PowerShell compatibility. So there are loads of commandlets in PowerShell, especially for SharePoint. And you can access almost anything in the SharePoint object model with PowerShell. And you can even extend the PowerShell commandlets with your own commandlets to support your own administration tasks. The backup and restore is also improved. And one very important thing is the sandboxing of solutions. We heard a little bit about it from Michael, which actually allows you to develop SharePoint solutions in a controlled way to, that you don't affect other solutions which are also hosted on the server, and therefore ease the development process a little bit. So how is the technology stack of SharePoint built up? Most of you might probably know, but at the bottom we have a 64-bit operating system. It can be Windows 7 for a development machine. It can usually for a production server, it's a Windows 2008 server or 2008 R2. So on the next step, we have, of course, the Internet Information Services 7.0. So this is actually the web server, which throws out the HTML. It doesn't do that much more. Also provides the web services and all that stuff. On top of it, we have the SQL Server, which stores the data. And we have, of course, the .NET framework. SharePoint is still on .NET or ASP.NET 3.5, so be aware when you're creating your solutions that you focus the right framework, otherwise they won't deploy on the SharePoint 2010. On top of that, we have SharePoint Foundation, which is free, so it comes usually with your Windows 2008 server. You can just install it, the SharePoint Foundation, and it gives you the basic things like team sites and lists and management of all that stuff, but it doesn't give you the advanced search, the metadata service, the business data catalog, and so on. And on top, we have the SharePoint server, which gives you all the other stuff. So, and everything can be used through different clients, through the browser, of course. We know all that. You can also access data directly out of Office. You can change or create tasks out of Office if you want to. You can sync everything with Outlook if you want to. There's also another tool called SharePoint Workspace. I don't know if anybody has heard of that, which comes with Office 2010, premium edition, I guess. And SharePoint Workspace is basically also an offline client, so you can sync all kinds of list data, document libraries, and everything you need and you want to carry on with your laptop, for example, when you're not on the net. You can edit the data, you can add items into lists, and then the next time you're back on the net, it syncs back to the SharePoint server. So pretty neat tools, I guess. So let's look a little bit further. What do we have for development? So some might be surprised. There is a Visio also in the development section. Why? Because in SharePoint 2010, you can design workflows with Visio. You can design them visually. You can just make your process in Visio and export it afterwards to SharePoint Designer, which is a little bit further into the SharePoint things. You can access all the lists, you can access all the ASPX pages which are on the server, and you can import and export workflows from Visio to Visio between SharePoint Designer. So this is pretty new. This hasn't been there in 2007 and makes it much easier to get started with the SharePoint development experience. And at the end, Of course, we have Visual Studio. We've seen a little bit of that already. Visual Studio is a little bit more focused on the more complex applications. You can develop almost anything on SharePoint with Visual Studio. And one of the main focuses of Visual Studio is, of course, also deploying SharePoint solutions on bigger farms and make things reproducible and also be able to restore, for example, older versions of your solution, which is not that easy with SharePoint Designer, because SharePoint Designer is usually like operating on the open heart. You're directly on your production site, and you're just doing your stuff there, and if something goes wrong, then you're pretty much up, fucked up. I would say it like that. Sorry. Sorry about that. I'm German, I can say that. Okay, so there's also a way from SharePoint Designer to Visual Studio. You can export your solutions from SharePoint Designer to a WSP package, which is a web solution package, so the P is somehow doubled. WSP is the standard package which is used for deployment on SharePoint, for example, through Visual Studio. We'll get into that later. So I've said already some words about Visio. It's just a slide of how workflows could look like in Visio. You just put in a start point where your workflow is starting. You have an end, and then you put in your tasks, which are there are several tasks available, like assigning a to-do item, doing some queries to a database, or creating list items, copying documents, and so on and so on. So you can design visually your workflow and afterwards export it to SharePoint Designer. And the good thing about that is later on when your workflow is running, you can also see visually at which step currently the workflow stands at, for example, for your document. Has anybody already worked with Visio Workflow Designer? Not that many. So actually, it's also a little bit limited. For most of the tasks, it's all right for easy workflows. But when the workflows are getting more complex, if you need some code behind, for example, then there's no way to get past Visual Studio. You have to program the workflow in Visual Studio. The other thing is SharePoint Designer, which is a little bit blurry. I don't know why. Or at least in my perspective, it's blurry. So SharePoint Designer, we'll get into that right now. It's, of course, it's a huge improvement to 2007. I would recommend to nobody to use SharePoint Designer 2007. Sorry about that. It can pretty destroy your whole page, and it's irreproducible. So you cannot repair anything. After that, if you start using SharePoint Designer 2007, also it crashes quite a lot, so probably don't use that. Get SharePoint 2010 and use SharePoint Designer 2010. Much better, also some ribbons, so it looks cool as well. So let's get started with a SharePoint Designer demo session. Let's see if that works. Yeah, here we are. So I think you've seen already the basic stuff of SharePoint 2010. Has anybody not used SharePoint 2010 yet? Okay, so you're all already upgraded to 2010. That's pretty good. So I don't have to explain that much about that. So you know you have your libraries, you have your lists. You can create some items in a list. Nothing new about that. Also, the only new thing is you have your pop-up windows. You can also program stuff like that, like these windows. So let's just save that. So let's go to SharePoint Designer. You can either open SharePoint Designer through the Site Actions menu, or you can start it and connect to your page. So I will just start it from here. I open my site. So here it is. I open the site at password. Somehow it's a little bit loud. Should I turn one off? I have a lot of cables here. I have two micros. Let's see, 1 second. No, some loop here. You can turn it off. I can speak louder if you want to. Doesn't sound so good. Okay, I carry on anyway. I have SharePoint Designer opened. I connected to my team site. So it's actually this demo site. The first thing when I start SharePoint Designer, I start on the settings page of the demo site. I can just rename it, for example. I go here, Roadshow. I save the change, and if I go back and press F5, or maybe not, if I press reload the page, then you see the page was renamed directly, so it's pretty instant. You can just make your changes directly without the hassle of navigating to the specific settings page and so on. It's a little bit much easier. Also, the same thing like creating a new library. I just go into lists and libraries, and I say I want to create, for example, let's say a picture library. Then I just add that here. And after that, when I update the page, I see that my picture library is in here. So if I do that through the interface, it takes a little bit more time. I go here to choose the library, have to look for the library, where is it, here it is, and so on. Also not that complicated. There are some things you cannot do from the front end, from the web front end. For example, the thing I want to show you right now. Let's imagine I have some customer data already in a SQL on a SQL server somewhere in my company, and I somehow want to access this data of all these customers in my SharePoint. And as Michael mentioned at the beginning, also, for example, in Outlook. And the thing is, I don't want to migrate all the data to a SharePoint list, which would be probably the first thing which comes into your mind. Now I want to leave the data in this, on the SQL server, and just want to synchronize somehow the data. So a thing which has been introduced with SharePoint 2010 is a new thing called external content types, and an external content type, as it says, is somehow bound to external data. So I'm just choosing the section of external content types. I have one already, but I don't want to use this one. I create a new external content type. Let's call it customers. Give him also the display name customers, and I want it to be a type of content, an office item content type. That's because I want later to synchronize it with Outlook. And yeah, offline sync should be available. So let's have a quick look into my SQL server where the data is stored. I connect to my server. We can see that there is a customers database, and the customers database has a table called customers. I just query the first top 1,000 rows, and we can see there are loads of names and companies and whatever in it with the whole addresses, and I want to just access all this data through SharePoint. As easy as that, I just go down here, connect to my data source. I had this one already, so I delete it. 1 second. No. Remove connection. So I add a new connection. Let's say it's a SQL server. The database is named customers. This one is optional. And I connect with my user identity, which is the administrator account. So hopefully it connects. Yes, here it is again. So I have all my tables. It's a little bit small here. Maybe I just make that, put the ribbon away. One of the good things of the ribbons is that you can hide them if you need some space. So here we are. Here's my customer's database. And in there, there's the customer's table, this one. And I just press the right mouse and say create all operations. So an operation is, as you can see, read, create, update, delete items in this table. So I create all operations for this list. And a wizard opens, which allows me to map all the special columns of this table to columns which I want to use in my SharePoint list. So we won't do anything to the custom ID, it's the unique key. But of course, I want to add the a display name, a little bit nicer looking, and I map it to an office property. So the company name would be, let's see, the company name, and I want to show that in a picker. The contact name will be the last name, and this one should be required. Contact title is the job title. The business address. Oops. No, the business city. Let's see, the state. Postal code, so it's pretty straightforward. Country, region, business. Now it's work phone, I guess. No. Let's see. Does anybody see the phone number? Business fax number, but not the. No, here it is. Sorry. So the business fax number. Company type, we don't have the company type in a standard contacts list, so we just leave that as a custom property. And we have the last name, and this is probably the last name. Let's see. Where is it? Did I use the last name already? Yes, I used it. So this is then the title, and this is the last name. So here we are. So it gives me a warning that the custom ID and required properties are set to true. I want that because it's the unique identifier, so I just don't worry about this warning. I could add some filter parameters, like I only want to have all the customers which, for example, are based in Portugal, and then I could filter to the country property and say only contacts from Portugal should be synchronized. But I leave it with all of them, so I press finish, and after that I press save, and now it's publishing all of that to something called Business Data Connectivity Metadata Store, which sounds pretty complicated, but isn't. So what we have done so far, we just created the connection without writing any line of code. But now, of course, we want to display the information, so I have to create a list out of this content type, out of this external content type. So we have our external content type customers here, and now we need the ribbon again, and we have to create an external list. So let's call the list customers. Here we are. Takes a little bit longer than the other list. Here is the list. So that's about it. It's already saved. So if I reload the page, I have my list customers, which will probably not. Oh, it does work. So It works already. What a surprise. Now, what I was thinking, usually the user I'm currently accessing is not permitted to access directly the database. So the next step would have been to just add the user or all users to the database connection to allow them to access the data. Anyway, even though it works, I will just show you how that works. So to allow people access to this database connection, I have to open SharePoint 2010 Central Administration. I go into the application management and to manage service applications, and there is something called Business Data Connectivity Service. So I go into there, and there I see my customers. And I just tick the checkbox and say set object permissions, and here is already my administrator, and that's why it's working already. So if I remove him, it should not work anymore. Although maybe I have to have permission. Yeah, so it says access denied. So you can define explicitly which users are allowed to access this database connection or not. So let's just restore that again. Here we are. Oh no, this. So let's set the permissions. And let's give him permissions to everything. Okay. So usually this takes some seconds until the permissions go into place. So they are there. They are. We have all the data here. Let's maybe. One second, sorry, wrong button. Make it full screen so that you see a little bit more. So this is exactly the same data you have in the database, and it's not stored in SharePoint. It's directly gone through to the database and accessing the data from there. So when I, for example, go onto one item and say edit item, here let's say Alfred, or maybe I choose somebody else which I can find. One second. Let's have a look here, which one is on the top. Oh, it's Alfreds of England anyway. So it's all right. I changed this one. Let's say, for example, it's Alfreds of Portugal. Save it. And when I go, so it's already in here, and then when I switch back to the database and just execute the query again, then it's already in here. Pretty cool, pretty easy, I would say. No line of code. So that's only the first step. We have our list here, and now as we have it in SharePoint, it automatically supports all the functionalities of SharePoint. So right now I'm able to connect this SharePoint list directly to Outlook. Just press Outlook. Outlook is starting in the background, I guess. So I have to install the connection. It's an unknown publisher, but I trust this time because it's me. So let's see what Outlook is doing. The customization was successful, but Outlook is not starting. Let's open it by ourselves. Let's have a look, and there they are not. So probably I just did I connect to something else on Outlook? Did I connect to SharePoint Workspace? Oh, sorry. Let's try it again. Connect to Outlook. That's what. Yes, that's good. Update now. Close. Sorry about that. Somehow doesn't want me right now. So probably I have to look into that afterwards. Tried it yesterday, but it worked, so probably I did something wrong, or it's the weather here. I don't know. Oh, there it is. Strange. Just to look away, and then suddenly it works. Don't know. Okay. Maybe I just looked in the wrong place. No, here it is as well. So now I have, let's get rid of the ribbon. So I have all my contacts directly out of the database. Everything is in the right place. So the full name is where it should be. The company name is at the right place. So this is actually what we've done with the mapping between the external data and in SharePoint Designer. So if I, the resolution is really bad at the moment, so I have to look for somebody, which I probably find again. Let's look for Portugal, yeah. Here's Alfred of Portugal, so I can change it back to England, that it works the next time as well. So I just saved it. Go back to my database, press execute, and there it is. Easy, isn't it? So these are external content types, which is, a pretty massive change in the whole accessing thing at SharePoint. In SharePoint 2007, you had to make your application configuration in a big XML file. You had to upload it to the central administration. Usually it didn't work at the first time, even not at the second run. So it was pretty tremendous work. And now we can just do it with some basic clicks. You don't have to know that much about SharePoint. The only thing is the business data connectivity services have to run on the system. But this is something your administrator should do, so you don't have to worry about that, hopefully. And apart from that, you're set to go. So let's go back to the presentation. Still blurry. Let's have a look further. One second. Here we are. So this was SharePoint Designer. So why should we use Visual Studio? As I said before already, Visual Studio is a little bit more complicated, of course, but with SharePoint Designer, you're not able to do everything. So that's exactly the reason. You can do more powerful things. You can edit and debug directly on your local server, on your development machine, which is not possible with SharePoint Designer. You can write in C#. You can even write in VB.NET. But I would not recommend that because most of the SharePoint developers are using C#. And if you want to find a code sample, then you have to translate it somehow. It creates the WSP packages, which are easy to deploy, which can be reused, which you can move to a different server farm, to a different development environment, and just do your testing on there. And it supports the application lifecycle management, which we will see in the next session. So you can get everything into source control. You have can check in, check out. You can work simultaneously on several files in the same solution. You can have a build server. If you have a pretty big application with a big business logic in behind, you can just let the build server do the work and get on developing on your own machine. You can do some code analysis and so on, and of course also testing, which is the second session after mine. So there are a lot of aspects which count for Visual Studio. Looks pretty bad in this slide. Anyway, I will show you later on. Visual Studio 2010 brings a lot more support for SharePoint developers than in 2008. So. Visual Studio 2008. Visual Studio 2008, you only had some few templates to develop for SharePoint 2007, and you didn't have anything for deployment. You were pretty much on your own to get everything on the machine. So it's not the case with Visual Studio 2010. 2010 helps you creating new items for project items for SharePoint, helps you packaging everything to a WSP, helps you to deploy everything. So it's much easier. It's fully integrated with Team Foundation Server. It has graphical tools to help you organizing your solutions, your features, and the packaging stuff. And one of the most important things is the F5 to build, deploy, and debug. So you can just work like you're working with a normal WinForms application, for example. You can just develop your code, press F5, browsers goes up. You can activate your feature, for example, and debug your code in there. This was possible also in 2008, in Visual Studio 2008, but with much more hassle. You had to attach personally to the correct worker process of SharePoint, and you have to had to find all the stuff on your server that everything worked with the debugging, and now it's really, really easy. We'll see it later. So, as I said before, we had to have project templates for several kind of projects. The easiest one is the empty SharePoint project, which does pretty nothing. We'll see it in the next session. We can do debugging, as I said, and we can create sandbox solutions. So, as before, sandbox solutions allow you to deploy code, even upload the WSP over the web front end to a solution store of the current website, activate your code without affecting any other site collection on your SharePoint site. So this is totally new and really, really helps, especially in hosted environments, for example, or, for example, if you have a lot of small solutions in a big SharePoint farm and you want to restrict somehow the developers only to use the parts they should use without affecting anybody else. Project items, I said it before, we'll get a slide, the next slide, I guess. Mapped folders, I don't know who has already developed for SharePoint 2007 or 2010, who has really done that. So you might probably know there is something called the SharePoint Hive. In 2007, it was called 12 Hive. This Hive is basically the structure where it's a folder. It's a folder where everything is stored, what SharePoint is. So all what you see when you access a SharePoint page is stored somehow in files in the SharePoint Hive. And the problem about SharePoint is you have to deploy your code into that Hive and without overwriting anything which is already there. So that's quite important, and there are some guidelines to help you that you do not overwrite anything there. And Visual Studio 2010 helps you when you develop your applications to map folders from your SharePoint Hive to your Visual Studio development environment, that you can just add documents, for example, or images to an images folder, which is mapped to templates images folder on the SharePoint Hive, and then later on, when the package is built and deployed on your server, everything is stored at the exact right location, and you don't have to think about that anymore. Another important thing, the SharePoint connections. SharePoint connections is an addition to the Server Explorer and allows you to connect to a SharePoint site and to navigate within the SharePoint site in a tree view, and yeah, we'll see it. So I had already the project templates. There are several of them. I mentioned the empty project templates. There are some web parts, workflow templates, also for the business data connectivity model, which we just had in SharePoint Designer. You can also, of course, develop that in Visual Studio. We have event receivers. We'll come to that later as well. List definitions, content types, several artifacts we usually use when developing for SharePoint. Although not all artifacts there are, but there are loads, and it's extendable. So any artifact you need in Visual Studio 2010 to develop for SharePoint can be added as an extension to Visual Studio. And there are several providers, open source, free artifacts. We also see one at the end of the session, which we created, which help you to develop also all that stuff which is not in Visual Studio by default. There are also some import templates, which is pretty important, like when you have old applications from SharePoint 2007, which, or let's say Windows SharePoint Services, WSS, which how it was called in 2007. These projects can be imported to SharePoint 2010 projects, and you can just recompile them, reference them to the new assemblies, and then deploy them on the SharePoint server again. So we had already sandbox solutions and debugging. I will get into that in the next session. And yeah, the thing about sandbox solution is pretty obvious. The one thing is you get some agility. You can get applications pretty easily run on your farm without going through all the IT processes, like validation of your code. Is everything all right? Do you get some permissions which you're not supposed to have, and so on? You just compile against the sandbox solution framework, and then you're good to go to put it on your SharePoint farm. And of course, the stability is much higher. So it's somehow in between here, between the agility you can develop and the stability you cannot harm anybody else on your SharePoint server. Good. We had already project items, which is basically a thing you add to existing SharePoint projects, like web parts as well. Modules, which is only some kind of XML, which helps you to deploy some files on your SharePoint farm or your SharePoint site, and so on. A lot of other project items. Probably you just get into it and try it out. There are a lot of demo sessions for that and hands-on labs at Microsoft Online. So it's a good start to get to know all these project items. Yeah, okay, I told you already about the map folders. Basically, I said already everything before I showed the slides, so I just skip over that. We had SharePoint Connections, the Server Explorer, and yeah, I will just show you that live now. So this is a pretty easy demo. It's actually a visual web part which displays... Sorry, that's my Mac thingy, which displays a tree view, or which will display a tree view of all sites and subsites with all their libraries and lists on this page. So we start up our Visual Studio. The solution really sucks. So let's have a first quick look at the SharePoint connection stuff. I opened the Server Explorer, and there is SharePoint Connections. I add a connection to my SharePoint site, so I press OK. It's already put in there. And there you see I have my site Roadshow, the one I renamed before. I see all the content types. I see features on this site. I can see the list templates, list libraries, and so on. And this is directly from the running site, and can just access it and also see all the properties of the stuff which is deployed on the SharePoint site which I'm accessing. So I can add several sites, but basically on your local system. So let's get started with our first small solution. I think I have to hurry a little bit. I'm talking too much. So let's get started. I just want to add a visual web part. We call it tree view. Let's store it in here. Visual web parts. The standard visual website is only available as a farm solution. There is an extension of some open source guys which allow also sandbox solution visual web parts, but in this case we only have this one, so we deploy it as a farm solution. So what do we have? The Visual Studio creates us. I'm sorry, I have to get some more space here. Okay, so what Visual Studio does, it creates a project which has already some SharePoint-specific project items in there. The one we've created is the Visual Web part. We can probably rename it to Tree View Web Part. So there it is. The Visual Web part contains several files. One file which is in most of these artifacts is called the elements XML, which actually says what is contained in this project item. In this case, it's a .webpart file, and the .webpart file, or no, actually it's a module. The module, as I said before, helps you deploying files to a specific location on your SharePoint site, and in this case, this module tells SharePoint when deploying the feature that the .webpart file should be stored in the _catalogs/WP folder, which is the webpart library where all the webparts are stored on your site. So this is an elements file. We'll see more of those later. We have our visual webpart CSS file. Let's remove that one. One second. Which does basically almost nothing but loading a user control, the Visual Web Part 1 user control, ACX, which is this one here. And it's just loading that one in the create child controls method, and that's about it. So let's have a deeper look into the control. The control is at the moment empty. When I go into in the design mode, it's also empty, so still pretty boring. So we add some code. Here we are. So the first thing is we want to add a tree view control. I can do the copy and paste thing at least as good as Michael, so I can do that as well. This is pretty easy. So we have the tree view control, and a standard ASP control for a tree view, and we gave it an ID and said show lines true, and now we go to the code behind, which is pretty common for a user control, that it has code behind. So I have some code for that one as well. But for once, the page load method, and second, a method called create hierarchy, so I add this in here. So I save it. So what it does, okay, we're still missing some reference, so I just go in here at Microsoft SharePoint. So what it does when the site is, or the user control is accessed, it catches access denied exception, okay. Then it clears all the nodes of the tree view. It adds the current site where the web part is placed to the tree view as the first node, and then it gets from the root web of the site collection all contents through a recursive method called build hierarchy, which adds nodes for all webs and for all lists, and then calls itself until it's at the end. So pretty easy, I would say, first grade computer science studies, so hopefully it works. So what we have now, we have our web part, and now we want to deploy it somehow. So there is one folder called features. Feature is the construct or the artifact which is used in SharePoint to add or activate special user code. So we have a feature here, it's called feature1.feature. I just double click it and rename it just to tree view. Let's say it's a site feature, and we see in this feature we have already our web part with these three files. The CS file is of course compiled and in the assembly, so we have only the user control SCX file, we have the .webpart file and the XML. If you have several features, then you can just move your parts to other features, rearrange everything when you're deploying. So it's, this helps already a little bit. The feature actually generates something which is called manifest. So in the manifest, or it says, okay, to this feature, following element XML files are belonging, and also following element file. So we won't go that much more into detail there. Then we have a package. The package definition is actually the thing which makes our WSP file at the end. So the WSP is needed to deploy your code on SharePoint. So if I go into the package explorer, which, or the package definition itself, it looks pretty similar to the feature, but it contains the one feature with its project items. And yeah, that's about it. It generates the manifest XML, which tells me, oh, I have a DLL which should be deployed into the global assembly cache, and I want to add a self-controls entry in the web.config that the code can be run. And it also tells me, okay, I have a template file which should be placed in this location, and I have my feature manifest. So that's it. When I click build, of course, my code is compiled without errors. Yoo-hoo. Then I can click package, and what package is doing, it creates my WSP. So when I just go into the location where my project is, into the bin folder, here's my WSP with all the files. A WSP is actually a CLB archive, so I'll just rename it to show you what it is. I extract everything. So now you see what's in there. We have our manifest XML, which was generated by the package. We have our assembly. We have our control template in the subfolder. And we have our feature with the feature XML and the web part and the elements XML. That's in a WSP. So everything is packed together for deployment. So let's do that. Let's go up there and say deploy. In the output window, we can see what is actually happening. By default, when you're deploying, the feature is automatically activated. So it says activating feature 1. Which should mean that the web part is accessible right now. I just reload that page. Takes some while because the Internet Information Server was reset in behind. So here we are back again. Go to my start page, edit the page, and now hold your thumbs that everything is working. I add the web part. Custom web part, and there it is. I just didn't rename it properly. So here it is. I save it, and there is my tree view. Pretty easy. Few lines of code, and there we are. We have already a fully functional tree view which can be expanded, and so on. So that's about a simple solution, very basic. Let's go back here. No, does it work? Here we are. Okay, I'll show you the debugging in the next demo. So we've seen the feature designer. We have seen the package designer, which allows you to rearrange what should go into your WSP file or not. Oh, we haven't seen the packaging explorer, which actually only helps you to components are in your project and somehow shows you where do they go. So my thingy says I have 5 minutes to go, but I think I need some more. So let's just go on until somebody cries. Okay.
Maybe split it.
No, right. So I have about, let's say, 15 minutes. Up to you. Hopefully 15 minutes. So just say stop. I can stop at any time, okay?
Okay.
All right. Then I go a little bit faster. There's also something called Developer Dashboard, which is an improvement in SharePoint 2010, which helps you actually getting to know what SharePoint is doing behind when it's running your code. So I'll just show that in there. And we switch the slides to live demo. So I already activated the developer dashboard on demand. So just when I click here on the icon on the very top right, then the developer dashboard turns on. This is this one. And it shows me loads of information about the process when the page is loaded. Like there was an init event, it took that time, and there was a database query and so on. And you can even add some code into your code which posts specific messages into your developer dashboard, or it also you can also measure times when your code is started until it's finished and so on, and you can get it directly into the dashboard here. So let's finish with that one. So let's go to the next demo. I just don't go back to the slides. The next demo follows up the Silverlight demo we had before. I just opened the existing solution we had just before. Two demos in each 5 minutes will be a little bit fast, so bear with me. So this is the same solution we had before with the WorldView Silverlight web part with the demo site here. I just can show. Oh, it won't work because I am not logged into the internet right now. 1 second, we'll see what it does. I just press play, and then I get an error. Yeah, okay, so. You have to imagine the map in behind because currently I'm offline. So there should be a map. You know what I mean. You have seen it before, so trust me, there is a map. Okay, so let's go back into here. So this is the same project we had before, and I just make it SharePoint available that I can deploy my XAP file. Which is created in the WorldViewer project that I can deploy directly to SharePoint with a feature. So the first thing I do, I add a new project. In this case, an empty SharePoint project. So let's call it Country Viewer. Oh, it didn't add it. Okay, I want to deploy it as a sandbox solution, but I didn't add it. Stupid me. 1 second. I have to reopen the old solution. So I have to edit here a new project. Here we are. Same thing. So first thing we want to do, we need a feature to activate everything. Let's call it World Viewer. What else do we have? Then next thing is we want to deploy some files. So I add a new item, in this case I add a module. Right. Except. And I add another module. Second, I'll explain it in a second. World ASPX. So what we're actually doing, we are deploying an ASPX page, which should contain the XAP file, and we also want, of course, to deploy the XAP file itself. We don't want to upload it manually to a document library, but just add it through our feature. And at the end, we want to have a feature receiver which when the feature is activated, adds a navigation item into the top navigation of my page where the feature was activated. And when I deactivate it, I want to remove it again. So that's about it. So the first thing is, now I have to peek in here how it's named. Okay, so this is my world ASPX. I renamed that one. In my elements XML, there is the sample sample TXT already in there. So when I rename that, it should rename it in here as well. So here's my ASPX, which does not contain that much. Let's take the code. So I won't explain everything, but there's basically an iframe which loads the XAP file. So I don't need that one. But I want, now let me see what I need now. So one thing I have to do, and now I need the properties window. I have somehow to assure that the XAP file from the World Viewer project is known in the Country Viewer project and will be deployed with it. So I go into the module. I open the properties window, wherever it is. Does anybody see the property here? It's the property manager on the wrong side. No, sorry. I only wanted to remove that one. Here we are. So, sorry about that. No, it's actually in the wrong place. Am I in the wrong? Do I have the wrong? Second properties. I needed this one, sorry. So what I have, the properties of my module, and I can add a project output reference here. And I want to add a project output reference to my World Viewer project, and I want to deploy it as an element file. So this basically says, take the ZAP file, which is produced from the World Viewer project, take it as an element file in my solution and deploy it in my WSP. So I press OK. And now I have to do a quick peek in my manual. See. Huh? Yeah, I know. So actually it's already in there. Very good. So this is my module, the WorldView XAP. So we are pretty much done. The only thing we need is the event receiver. So I add an event receiver in here. An event receiver, as it says, runs when the event occurs. In this case, we want to have the event feature activated and the event feature deactivating to do some work. So I go back in here. I have already my code. As I said before, it just adds a navigation item to the navigation of my current page. So I paste it in here. Still some reference missing, so I add this one. And hopefully I'm done. Let's see if I get any errors. Looks good. So one more thing. I don't want the feature to activate on default. So the thing, how can I do that? I go into the properties of my SharePoint project, go into SharePoint, and change the deployment configuration from default to no activation. Actually, you can do your own configurations in here. We'll just have a quick look into the no activation, which says what should be done, run the pre-deployment command, recycle IIS, and so on and so on. Do a lot of things. And in this case, we don't want to activate the features at the end of our deployment tasks. So that's it. And now we just add a breakpoint into our feature receiver in here. that we can also see the debugging. And now we start debugging. Oh, it's the wrong project, sorry. Didn't want to do start debugging of that one. I need a new startup project. Yeah, here it is. So the SharePoint project should, of course, be the startup project and not the Silverlight project. Otherwise, the web page is started. So that's it. I just press again. Debug. So now it's deployed, hopefully. No, it's still retracting the deployment I made before. So how long do I have? Okay, I don't want to know. Okay. So here we are. This is our page still running. So nothing happened so far. It's the project is deployed and it's still it's in debug mode at the moment. So it connected to the worker process, but as the feature is not yet activated, nothing happened. So when the page is loaded, I will start activate the feature manually, and then it should switch back to Visual Studio, hopefully, and show me where actually my code is running. But the IIS prevents me from doing so. So let's see, here it is. So I go into the site actions, site settings of the page. Then it was a web feature. Was it a web feature? I don't remember. Was it a web feature? Okay. So somewhere in here should be my world viewer. Here it is. So I press activate. So now it should go back. Here we are. So now we are back in our code. At our breakpoint I set up before, I can see my web object. I can just do my debugging, see what else is in there, and I can just press F10 and go through my code, what it should do. In this case, it's looking through the navigation nodes of the quick launch navigation on the left, if it finds something with the title applications, and then if it finds it, it adds my node as the first node to my world ASPX file, which was deployed with the feature. So I just continue, press carry on, go back here, and here's my world viewer. And we see that it doesn't work because I forgot wrong project. Let's see, I forgot, let's just press here. To add this file, probably. No, do not copy. No, actually, that's all right. So, I think I won't sort that out that quickly. Somehow the world viewer. Yes, we fix it in the lunch break, so as usual. But you can imagine there should be the ASPX file. You have seen it before. No. Sorry about that. Actually, it should have been there. Another thing you can see now, it's gone again because a tick box was ticked to retract the solution after I stopped debugging. So that's why it's gone again, because I stopped debugging in Visual Studio. So there's only one quick demo and then I'm finished. I do it in 5 minutes. May I? And then I'm done. Do you want to do it? No. So it's only, okay, it's a kind of personal thing, so that's the reason why I really want to do it, because we added an extension to Visual Studio as well to improve the development a little bit, and the extension is for free, so don't worry, you don't have to buy anything right now. You can if you want, but you don't have to. It's an extension called SharePoint Software Factory. Let's go just a quick look back to the slides. It's an extension for Visual Studio which helps you creating a lot of this XML stuff you're doing all the time, like working with content types, with element XML, and so on. It's an extension which integrates into your SharePoint project, and you can just access all that stuff directly from a context menu when selecting your project. So you can download it for free on CodePlex. It's called SPSF, SharePoint Software Factory. Now I give you a brief demo of 5 minutes. Without further delay, you'll get into your lunch break, I hope. So I just create a new project. And the good thing about that is I've done that pretty often, so it should probably work. So let's do one of the concepts which came with SharePoint 2007 are content types to have reproducible data types which you can use on several pages. So I just make a content type project. And usually when creating a content type and creating a list definition with this content type, you need pretty much XML to do that, and you have to know pretty a lot. So we created a guidance package called SharePoint Software Factory, just at a 2010 application and created. So what it does, it sets up my project, it adds several stuff which is usually only needed for team building on a team foundation server, which my colleague will talk about. Then I get a wizard which tells me what kind of structure I want, the old Hive structure which we used in 2007 development, or the new structure we have seen right just before. I can add a name, I think pretty basic. So that's it. We have some code checks in there and so on. Don't worry about all that. You can look that out for yourself. So what it does, it creates the project. You see a lot of files are added to my project. A SharePoint project is added and so on. Now we are done. So we have WSP file, the empty SharePoint project. And the difference here now, I can still add project items as usual, like you're used to. But additionally, you have loads of more items which are here in the SPSF navigation menus. You can, of course, still add a feature, but with a little bit more settings. You can add content types, side columns, and so on. You can create field types, actions. The next version also has ribbon actions and all that stuff you need for adding something to a SharePoint ribbons, event handlers, feature stapling, publishing. You can import WSPs into your project and redeploy them, add application pages, and so on. A lot of web parts. So I will give you a quick demo of a feature which deploys a content type. So I want to create a content type. I don't need a feature receiver. I could add some activation dependencies, for example, for the publishing features if I want to. Usually you have to look up all these GUIDs, the unique IDs of the features, and add them manually. So this wizard actually helps you quite a lot without looking up all that stuff, but I don't need it here. So that's it. I just press finish. So here's my feature, and you see there's also already added a feature icon which I can customize. So already follows some conventions as well as naming conventions for features and so on, that you can find everything on your SharePoint again and know where it belongs to. So the next thing is a side column, and just an easy side column like my property. I add it to my existing feature. Just leave it like that, and I want to make it, for example, let's say a multiple lines of text field. I add it. So what it does, it added a property here with all that stuff which you usually should have to write on your own in XML. So the next thing is I add a content type which should use the property. property. So let's see, should be an item content type. I want to add my field. This is my property here. I could also upload a document template if it was a document content type. Could add some feature receivers, but I leave it with that. Custom forms as well for my content type. So I just press finish. Now my content type is created with a lot of XML and not that lot, but some XML. And automatically linked to my site column I added just before. So the next thing I need is a list definition to create a list with this content type. So my list definition, I add it to the same feature. It's a custom list. And I add my content type here. A lot of settings which I don't need. So there we are. 1 second. So we created the list definition XML. We created the schema XML, which links to my content type. So pretty basic, all that stuff. And the last thing we need is a list instance. So we want to create actually a list of this list definition. So my list instance. Same feature again. So and we choose the template we had before of my list definition. And here we are. And all that is already to run. So you want me to show how it runs, or do you believe me? I think we'll sum it up with that. Yeah, to sum it up, Visual Studio is quite powerful. You can do a lot of stuff with it. You can do everything you want with where you want to develop for SharePoint. It gives you loads of possibilities, but in some cases, SharePoint Designer might be enough for your cause, what you want to achieve. So a good thing is to know all these things, but as you have seen, Visual Studio development is not that complicated as it was before. Actually, it's pretty easy when you know what you're doing, as usual. So you have to know a lot of these specifics, like these artifacts, and something like the Software Factory helps you to get to know all these artifacts. But also the standard Visual Studio components are a pretty big leap forward in SharePoint development. So that's about it. Let's have a lunch break. Sorry. So this is the Codeplex page. Download it. And.
So, but then from where we started,